Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode number 6 of the Triathlon Age Group Journey. My name is Jay Cunet, and I'm with my friends and co-hosts, Jillian Carlson and Matt Summer. We are busy working professionals and fanatics about our families, and we're also competitive age group triathletes. We love hearing stories that explain why age group triathletes choose to juggle day-to-day training and living life. We want you to know that you're not alone in your efforts, whether in a basement, garage, shed, or outdoors. We are in this together, learning from one another. This week, we'll be talking to Doug Silk. Doug is a family man, federal agent, Clydesdale and Masters Division racer who won the 2018 USAT Long Distance National Championships in Miami. He's focusing on coaching and has moved into some unique endurance sport passions that we'll talk about. There was a lot of news out there in triathlon world this week, so we'll also touch on our thoughts about that. So, Matt, Jillian, how are you? Have you recovered from Thanksgiving?
Hey, Jay. Yeah, doing pretty well this week. I've recovered from Thanksgiving, which is good, starting to get back into the swing of things. But we got snowed on lately. So I'm in Seattle. We get snow occasionally, but usually not this early. And it was enough to actually cancel school this week. And then it's today, we ended up getting snow again and really big flakes sticking. It's so beautiful, which is perfect as we're, you know, decorating, taking down Thanksgiving and decorating for Christmas. So it's been pretty nice. It's been a pretty busy week with work in accounting and month end close and then kids being home. So it's been quite the week, but at least it's good to get back at it. How about you, Matt?
Yeah, I'll definitely second that. It was definitely hard getting back in the swing of things this week. Obviously, I was out with Jillian for Thanksgiving, and I traveled home on Monday. And so it was a lot of fun. Got settled back in. I think everybody was a little bit more ambitious after Thanksgiving back in the gym. So everybody was ready to work a little harder and focus in and got Christmas decorations up here at home. My son and I got a brand new tree this year. So we got all that put up. We got the outside lights put up. And in between all that, found some time to train. That was nice. I'm definitely loving these shorter sessions. Long runs of an hour, bike rides are like 75 minutes long. By the time I'm like halfway through, I'm like, God, this is great. It's almost done already. So I just need to watch my diet. I got to remind myself I'm not riding 3 hours and I can't eat like I'm riding 3 hours. I don't know. So how about you, Jay? What you been up to?
I'll second that on the eating and duration of training. Busy week of super family dynamics with the driving kids to events and sports and school. And we had my daughter's birthday party this weekend. So getting the basement ready. The good news was, and you all know that I was working on a new dance floor for her in the basement. And it was the hit of the party that the girls were using it as much as I ever thought they would, and that really made it special. So, and somehow I crammed in all my training, definitely in odd hours. I actually slept in both days this weekend because the basement was taken by the kids, so I got to sleep in, but had to figure out the afternoon schedule to squeeze in the run and the bike. And so, hey, I'm feeling good. I got extra rest.
It's funny that you mentioned about, I was not even thinking about at the gym and the uptick of people after Thanksgiving. And I do remember when I went to the gym this week, I was like, couldn't quite get my normal spot that I usually go to foam roll. I had to, you know, relocate. And I do remember noticing that there definitely was an uptick in people. And so that makes a lot of sense. It'll be like that again in January, right?
Oh, yes. Yep. I'll capitalize on that come January. Yeah. We have a joke in the clubhouse at the country club I work at that the chef fattens them up during the 2 months, and then I get to skinny them back down come January. So
nice. Good for business then for you, huh?
Absolutely.
Nice. Okay, well, how about if we jump right into Matt's quote of the week?
All right, definitely. Well, this week, again, I always like to bring humor into my quotes. And you may have seen this one before. It's out there. It's kind of funny. But the day you plant the seed is not the day you eat the fruit. It's all about patience. You got to put the work in. You got to let it come to you. Everything takes patience and discipline. And that's one of the things I like to remind athletes, my training clients, my son, every person in my life. Just because you do something on one day doesn't mean it's going to happen the next. Good things take time. What do you guys think about that?
I immediately went to thinking about how many seeds we plant in the process of getting ready for a race. The tree that you're growing probably has multiple branches, multiple trunks, because you're constantly planting seeds to figure out what that fruit's going to look like on race day and how it's going to work on race day. So it's just constant. But the key is that consistency, but then nurturing it. The consistency is nurturing the seeds, the watering it, making sure the soil's good, the foundation of that tree is strong, and then you work your way up to finally the sweet stuff on race day. Love it. That's a good one.
Doug, what do you think?
Well, I was thinking about my triathlon journey and how it all started. And the first seed was planted with a bike ride with a friend of mine that was a 15-mile bike ride. And I thought, hey, why not? You know, let's get on a bike and see what I do. Like, I'm athletic. 15 miles later, my ass was sore. I drafted off him the entire time, and we got done, and I fell down on the patio of his sister's lake house. And I was like, oh my God, I never want to see a bike again. And literally the next day he's like, do you want to ride again? I was like, no, there's no way. But then we did ride the next day, and it was a little easier. I still drafted off him the whole time. My butt still hurt. And, you know, it was crazy. But then he was like, hey, what do you think about doing this Livestrong 90-mile bike ride? And I was like, bro, I could barely ride 15 miles. How am I going to go ride 90? And he said, it's just one pedal stroke at a time. Like, get on the bike and start going. And so it started with that little seed that I didn't even know was being planted at the time. And it grew into, you know, my triathlon career. So I can definitely understand and relate to that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Jillian, how about you?
I think that not everybody's time from seed to fruit is the same. And I think for me, it's about reminding myself that even if or when you think you're planting seeds at the same time as even family or friends or whatever it is, that the growing process is unique and individual. And you will see some get fruit before your fruit's ready, but to know that you need to keep nurturing that soil, keep feeding, keep watering, your time will come. And sometimes you'll be the one where your fruit's ready before other friends or family that are training or on a similar journey that maybe started planting their seeds at the same time or around a similar time. And so you want to keep encouraging them because it's just not their time yet. So when I hear that, I think that's what resonates with me, is be patient, but also be careful in thinking your fruit should be ready before it actually is.
Now, this is one that I pull out quite often with personal training clients and athletes, because impatience is one of the biggest problems that people have, is they want immediate gratification. They want it right then and there. And Jay, the analogy you had of giving it the right amount of water, the right amount of sun, the right amount of food, treating it like a plant, it takes precision, it takes patience, it takes the right amount of everything to cultivate and to harvest. And that's exactly how triathlon training is. And on a more global, broader scale, life. I use this quote a lot with my son, and it's like, just be patient. And I think that's ultimately what I was looking at there. Well, I'm really excited about our guest here today. I've known Doug Silk now probably for about 4 years. As many of you know, I coach for Tri-Dot Triathlon Training, and Doug is a peer of mine. He also coaches with Tri-Dot Triathlon Training, and Doug is a federal agent. Doug's definitely a family man. I think he epitomizes what it means to be a family man. I know he's got two young boys, age 6 and age 4, happily married. He's been doing triathlon since 2010. Doug's completed 5 full Ironman races, over 25 70.3s, and hundreds of other smaller races. If you guys could see what we're seeing right now in his pain cave, I think the guy's got his walls just covered with race bibs. He's got more medals than I've ever seen in my life hanging up, but just a very decorated athlete out there. As Jay mentioned earlier, he is a Clydesdale racer. That's really his specialty, come coaching. And he's also won the 2018 70.3 National Championship in race as a Clydesdale. Unfortunately, injuries have taken a little bit of toll on him, and he's had to cut running out, and he's transitioned to adventure racing. So we're going to hear about that. Doug, welcome. We're glad to have you here. We can't wait to share some story time with you and hear about your journey into this crazy sport we call triathlon. Welcome.
Excellent. Yeah, thank you for having me. That's the one thing I love about this sport is that, as Jillian was saying, we all start in different places and have different goals. And you can look around on race day and you can see people who are scared to death. And you can see people who are just out there to go have fun and finish the race. And some of those might go back and forth. but I love this sport. I love what it's done for me. I was a college athlete. I played college basketball in Division I and didn't realize that I had put on a lot of weight because I was still playing sports. And I played semi-pro football as well. I was a kicker. And I thought that I was still athletic until I did that bike ride we talked about. And then I realized that I was, I'm 6 foot and I was 255 pounds. And, you know, I was really overweight for this sport, quote unquote, for what people think. Especially when you go out and you look around and, you know, there's 160 pound dudes out there running. And I'm like, hey, I'm just the fat guy out here and don't mind me. But, you know, that's what's so great about this sport is that it is for everyone. I mean, can't tell you how many times on a 70.300 Ironman course that I have been passed by an 80-year-old person. It is the great equalizer, I say. So I'm happy to be here and I'm happy to share a little bit about my story.
That's awesome. So Doug, I know you mentioned that first bike ride with your friend and you went out. So you mentioned doing the Livestrong 90 miler. Did that actually happen? Was that your first taste?
Yes.
Or what was your first taste of multisport?
So we were both major Lance Armstrong fans and watched the Tour de France all the time. And Lance was hosting a 90 mile Livestrong ride out in Austin, Texas. And we went out, it was July 4th weekend. And we did those first two rides and the Livestrong ride was in October. And he was like, look, I'm going to let you keep this bike. Just go ride three times a week. Start seeing if you like it. If you do, then we'll start training. And I said, okay. So a week or so goes by and I had done a couple, maybe 15 mile rides. Cause like I was probably averaging about 15 miles an hour. And I was like, you know what? I like this. This is cool. So a couple weeks later, I was like, all right, man, let's do it. Let's sign up. He's like, okay, great. So what we're going to do is next weekend, there's a sprint triathlon and we're going to go out and do it. And I was like, okay, why not? We're here. I mean, I grew up swimming like at the beach, but not like this. I was never on swim team. I was never in anything. So we go out for our first race and being Clydesdale, we were the very last group to start. And I just remember that race because we were standing in the water and in South Florida, storms can blow through in, 15, 20 minutes. And this big electrical storm blew through, but people had started the Olympic race, but because of the lightning, they pulled them out of the water. And we were just standing there going, these people are nuts. Like they're going to get back in the water after this lightning storm. And they're like, you are too. And the swim was supposed to be a 400 meter swim. And I had timed myself from this pier to another pier swimming it. And I knew it was going to take me roughly 18 to 20 minutes, right? I mean, I was really bad. So we get to the turn buoy and I look at my watch and it says 15 minutes. And I still had to swim all the way back. It ended up being a 750 meter swim.
Oh, wow.
And my buddy Derek was in the water and I could see him and I was like, don't let me catch you because I might drown you. And we get back and we're the last two bikes in transition. Like I put on socks and gloves and like all this like race kit and like whatever. And so we go out riding and I knew that I couldn't draft off of him. But I didn't realize that if you engage in a pass that you have to initiate the pass. And so I ended up getting a penalty because I didn't initiate the pass. I just dropped back and I cramped up the entire run And I literally got done with that race and I crossed the finish line. And after I said a lot of cuss words, I literally went to him and said, "When's the next one?"
You were hooked.
And I was hooked because as a team athlete, right? Like basketball, football, whatever, I can go out and have a great game and we can lose the game. Because individual performance is not as important as the team performance. Triathlon, what you put in is what you get out, and what your goals are very individual. And so that's why I said earlier, like, there are people that just want to get through the race. And so that is a success. And then there are people that want to podium. And if you don't, then they're mad. And you'll see those people at the race. But it's very individual. And I love the fact that I'm racing myself.
Yeah. Do you ever wonder when you get that penalty and you're like, come on, guys, I'm clearly not in the lead for this.
Yeah, I had no, I mean, come on. I had started in the very last.
Right.
I mean, that little drafting segment may have, you know, added like 5 seconds to my overall race time. I mean, I probably finished in the last 10 people in the entire race.
Wow.
But after that race, you know, I really was like, all right, let me figure out what this is, because I don't know. And I had coached high school football and basketball. And so, like, I've been a coach. So I love that picking things apart and figuring out how to get better, right? So I surrounded myself with people that were way better in the sport than me. I read every article or book or anything that I could find. I listened to every story and took it with a grain of salt, because everybody has advice that is sometimes good and sometimes bad. So you have to take that with a grain of salt. But I really, the number one thing I knew I needed to do was lose weight, because at 255 pounds, I mean, it was funny, because at the time Clydesdale was 200, and we're standing at the race start, and here's me at 6'2", 255, and here's this 6'4", 201 pound Adonis standing next to me that was also racing Clydesdale. And I was like, how is that even fair? Like, this guy was washing his jersey on his abs before the race. and I'm eating a donut. So,
oh boy.
Yeah. So, like, I didn't really know how that was fair, but I was like, all right, let me get down to 201. Like, that's where I want to be. And I lost 50 pounds in 3 months.
Wow.
I at that point I did Nutrisystem, and I literally did it like to the T. Like, I didn't eat anything different, and I dropped 55 pounds in 3 months. And eventually I got down to about 185. And then now, you know, that was many moons ago, but now I embrace the Clydesdale, even at 220. So
I wanted to ask about Nutrisystem, because I think that's fantastic, because it got you on a journey to lose that weight. What was the path forward to get to 185? Did Nutrisystem support racing? I don't know if it's compatible, but did you find a diet that worked?
Yeah, I would say not what I know now. And being a coach, I wouldn't recommend trying to be a long distance endurance athlete and maintain that calorie, you know, deficit that you have to maintain in those. But at the time I didn't know any better. And so I would say after I got off of it, like, you know, the 3 months that I was on it, it really taught me how I should be eating and portion size and, you know, those kind of things. And then on top of that, then I started training a whole lot more. At the time, I was just doing sprints and maybe a couple Olympics. Like, I thought people who did half Ironmans and Ironmans were nuts. I was like, there's no way I'm doing that. And it took me about 3 years before I jumped up to the 70.3 distance.
That's what I was wondering. How long did it take you to become nuts?
Well, you know, once you go off the rocker, like, there's no getting back on. Like, I think the 70.3 distances is my all-time favorite distance, because I think it's just over that line of where you can fake it, you know, because you can fake it in an Olympic, right? But you can't really fake it at a 70.3. So I think that that's where that sweet spot is for me, or was when I was running. That's why I did so many of them. But, you know, at first I was like, man, there's no way I'm doing that far. But yeah, in South Florida, you could race almost every weekend. So that's where a lot of the medals that you see on my wall came from, because I was racing. There was a company called Multi Race, and they literally offered these series after series after series, and you could race almost every weekend if you wanted to. But in that 3 months, it was kind of the off season, so nobody's really racing, because we finished in November. So December, January, and February, like that was kind of the off season. At the beginning of February that next year, I did my first sprint race after losing all the weight, and I placed third in my age group.
Oh, wow.
So I went from finishing, you know, in the very back to getting a taste of the podium. And then I was like, oh my God, I love this sport.
Tell me about your family involvement in triathlon. It's not just you racing in the household. How do you all balance, or how did you balance when you both were racing triathlon? And obviously we're going to get to what you're up to now, but how are you juggling all of that?
Yeah, you know, it's tough. So I will say, like, when it was just my wife and I, my wife, when we first met, she had been a runner, but she thought I was crazy for doing races. I met her in Las Vegas when I was stationed there. And the first weekend that I was there, there was an Olympic distance race. And I was like, oh, I want to do that. And so she came out and watched it. And she was like, what are you thinking? And had no desire to do any of it. And now she's done 4 or 5 70.3s. Her first one, she went from an 8 hour and 5 minute 70.3. And a year and a half later, she broke 6 hours.
Wow.
So, I mean, she's an athlete. She's a stud. In fact, we joke all the time because she said that when she started beating me, I had to knock her up. So that's when we got pregnant with our first son. But yeah, we're very, very competitive. I mean, we couldn't run together because we'd be running next to each other and a car would come and I'd like drop behind her. And then I'd like, you know, jump back up with her. And she's like, just go, you know, that dark voice and the, you know, just go. I don't need that. But yeah, she is uber competitive. So yeah, then we had our first son, and that year I did my second Ironman, like literally 4 weeks after he was born. So all of the training was like while she was pregnant. And then we went to Cosmo and did, yeah. You know, it's funny because, you know, when he was born, they sleep and eat and, you know, whatever, but I have pictures of him in a bassinet next to me on the trainer, and he would like the hum of the trainer. So, I mean, my kids have seen us racing their whole life. You know, he did, my oldest did an Iron Kids race this last year or two. Both of them did, the Iron Kids at 70.3 Ohio. And then during COVID time, my oldest did his first Iron Kids, race here in the neighborhood. And, you know, so they love it. And every time I come home with a medal, like it's their medal, it's not mine anymore. So, you know, they like to put it around their neck. But I tell people all the time that when you're training, there are sacrifices that you have to make that should always err on your training rather than your family, because your family is going to be there in the end of this. You know, when the race is over, those people are going to need you back. So like when we get into taper time, I tell my athletes that have kids or whatever, I'm like, take them on walks with you, you know, take your kids out on a bike with you while you go running. If they're old enough to do that, take them in the jogging stroller. I mean, I can't tell you how many runs I did with my boys in strollers, and I tried to maintain my same training standard, whether I was pushing a double bob or if I was by myself, and that just made me stronger. So I think making sure that you integrate your family and that you make them understand that this is not just for me, it's for them as well. You know, I'm 46 now. Like, I want to stay in shape so that I can play out in the yard with my kids. And this is my way to do that and still get something out of it as well.
I mean, that's a great philosophy, Doug. I know you and I have talked a lot just on the coaching side. And I think Jay, Jillian, I mean, all three of us feel the same way. And it's so refreshing to hear you agree with that, Doug. That's awesome.
So my very first Ironman, I actually proposed to my wife during the race. Aww. So it was in Cozumel. She knew that I am like, all right, I have everything down to a T. She used to joke with me that I practice transitions in the house, you know, because like, I'm like, I can't give up that time. If it's a smaller race, like in my area, I'm scouting out other people who are going to be in the Clydesdale division to know who I need to beat and where I need to push and those kind of things. Right. So first Ironman comes around in Cozumel, and we had been talking about getting married, and she didn't know that I already had the ring made and had it with me. Well, I had it in a bag and I had it safety pinned on the inside of my kit. And, you know, so the swim, I had a swim skin on over my kit. So I wasn't worried about it like coming out or anything like that, but took it with me the entire time. like I did check it several times. Like, okay, is it still there? Yeah, it's still there.
Yeah. I can't wait to see where this is going.
Yeah. Well, so then we, I had friends that were there and I had shirts made for them that were, they were pink and that said our group name and friends and family or whatever. So, Cozumel is a 3-loop run course, and my friend that was with her knew that as I was starting my third loop, I was going to propose to her. Well, my first loop was really hard and I was kind of in a dark place. And luckily I ended up running into another American on the course, and she was on her last loop and I was about to start my second. So in the second loop, I started talking to her and I started talking about like, hey, I'm about to propose to my girlfriend. Like, this is amazing. Like, you know, this is what's going on back home. Like, and, cause I'm trying to keep her mind off of it. Right. Like, cause as we all know, running is, I'd say it's 80% mental and 50% physical. Because you need to have that overlap of the mental to overcome the other 50%. So I was trying to take her mind off of it. And I kind of dug myself out of those dark spots. And it had rained really hard for probably about 2 miles of the run. So, you know, roughly 20 minutes or so. And we came around the last loop and I got the ring out and it had fuzz on it from the little bag. So like I rinsed it in a puddle on the ground. And, I had it on my pinky and like, I walk up to her and I was mad because she had her phone out and I'm like, I need to talk to you. So put your phone away. And I told her, I said, look, I couldn't do any of this without you. And I don't ever want to do it without you in my life. And, you know, will you marry me? And she said, yes. And I was on my knees and somehow I was able to actually get up. I don't know how to this day. and then I was like, all right, I have to go finish now. And I had 8.5 miles that went by like in the blink of an eye because I was stoked. I tell her now, I joke, I said, if you would have said no, you would have had about 1.5 hours to go get your stuff and get out of the place that you're staying in.
Oh, man. We've talked so much about gratitude and that positive mindset, and yours is just an ultimate extreme example of how that can completely propel you to a finish line.
I mean, it really did. I really don't remember. All I remember is that last like 8 miles, I was high-fiving every volunteer and ready to go. And then what was even more special is like, as you come into Cozumel, you come in and then you turn a hard left to go to the finish line. And she was standing right there and the announcer had seen her shirt. And so because I got her a new shirt that said he did 140.6, but I got a ring. And so that way my friends would also know that I had done it so they could actually say something at that point. So he saw that. And when I came over and kissed her and then ran to the finish line, he let her announce me across the finish line. So it made my first Ironman finish even more special. And, you know, she had heard Mike Riley 1,000 times. So she did it just like Mike, maybe better. But yeah, it made it even more special.
There must be something about Cozumel. Last week, one of my athletes raced Cozumel, and he was telling me a story that on the course, he came up on somebody that said, just married. And he said he started talking to him, and literally at mile 1 on course, they had a ceremony and got married. at Cozumel.
Nice.
And I was just like, are you kidding me? He said, no, they had a preacher, whoever, like right there on the side in the middle of it. And the two of them stood right there.
That's fantastic.
And got married on course.
Oh, wow. That's
awesome. Both of them running?
Yeah, both of them were doing the race. Must be something about Cozumel. Oh, my gosh.
I don't think I could ever do that. Like your time, you know, like, that would totally ruin your time.
And that was what was so funny is like her first post, you know, to people was like, he took time out of his race to do that. Like she got that was so important to me. This was my first Ironman and I was taking time to show her that she was more important than that race to me. And I say all the time, like people are like, oh, why didn't you do it at the finish line? And I was like, number one, I didn't want to take from anybody else's finish. Right. Because like if you've crossed that Ironman finish line, you know what that feels like. And I didn't want to take that from anybody. And number two, selfishly, like I didn't want to take away from my finish line finish either. But I knew that she would understand that by me stopping in the middle of my race and taking that time, which I mean, in the end of things, it was what, 3 minutes or something in 13 plus hours. Sure. So so she got it though. So I'm still trying to convince her to go do her first in Cozumel. So we both have that, but she hasn't taken the bait yet.
Wow. Okay. So after that first one, you've done four more full distance 140.6 since then, correct?
So 3.5. So I've started 5. I wrecked at Ironman Canada at about mile 72 of the bike. I was hugging the right side. A gust of wind blew my tires off into the gravel and I went down and I separated my shoulder and broke my hand. Mm. But I got back up and I rode for 20 more miles purely on adrenaline. And then that was in Whistler and you had to climb back up into Whistler from the flats. And I made it up the first hill. Okay. But I could barely put any pressure on the handlebars with my left hand because of my shoulder and my hand. And there was a speed zone because of a downhill section. And that was the first time I had to put like both hands on the brakes again. And I got down and I got to the bottom and a medic on a motorcycle pulled up next to me. He's like, son, are you okay? And I was like, yeah. I mean, I wrecked a while back, but I think I'm okay. He's like, well, you screamed down that entire hill and it wasn't like a woohoo. And I was like, okay, maybe I'm in more pain than what I'm letting on. And so I called it a day. And listen, I say this all the time because I think that it's important for people to remember. And I think that especially hearing this in an age group journey, podcast, people need to understand that no race is worth your health, that there will always be other races, that there is no shame in DNFing, DNSing, like pulling out at any time. Like anybody who says that to you can go, they can go pound sand. Because to me, it's better to be smart and live to fight another day than to hurt yourself or, you know, risk not being able to come home to my kids. Like, I'm sorry, it's just not worth it.
Amen.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
So yeah. So I have 4.5 fulls and like 25 halves with a couple DNFs built in there as well. You know, sometimes you go out and you go too hard and you blow up and it's okay.
I think it's obvious to say that probably the highlight or the biggest moment in your multi-sport career was probably that 2018 national championship. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
It was Miami Man, and it was the 70.3 long distance championship. I went into that race not really thinking anything. I was just going to go out and try to have a good race. And I got off the bike, and one of my best friends is from that area. That was actually the first 70.3 I did. So like I went back to go get revenge because I actually tripped and fell and separated my shoulder in the run the first time I did my first 70.3. And I actually finished that race because I was just on the run and I was like, whatever. But I wanted to go get revenge. So I get on to the run and my buddy was like, hey, I think there's only like 3 people in front of you in the Clydesdale. And I was like, okay, whatever. Like, no big deal. So like, I'm running, looking at everybody's calf to see if anybody's got a C on it. And, you know, like, I remember seeing one, and it was like this big loop run. And I get out to the second loop, and I see my buddy again, and he's like, hey, I think you're in third. And I was like, oh, all right, well, let's push a little bit harder. And so I started pushing, and I don't remember even seeing anybody else. And then I got done, and they're like, here's your championship jersey and medal. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. So it was completely unexpected. I did not even have, by my standards, a good race, but just got lucky that none of the, you know, 6'4 Adonises were there that day. And I got lucky. So
that's awesome.
Nice.
Congratulations. That's so cool.
The highlight of my career, and this is going to sound funny because by most people's standards, this would not be, Ironman Texas 2019. I went into that race. I had a really strong swim. I PR'd my bike and started to try to leave transition, and I threw up three times. That year, apparently they had a lot of runoff in the lake that, like Starkowitz, like puked across the finish line that year, like a bunch of people DNF'd. Well, I threw up three times in transition, and this medical person wouldn't let me leave the tent until I could hold down some water, because they were just watching me like throw up everything I've ever eaten. So I got out and I was like, there's no way I'm going to be able to run now. Like, it's Texas heat. So I'm just going to go out and finish. And I set out and I walked that entire marathon. And during that time, literally, I just tried to lift up everyone around me because we're all suffering at that point in an Ironman. And it was my slowest Ironman time, but it's the one that I'm actually the most proud of, because I could have easily stopped. And I was right there in transition, right? Like, just go get my bike and call it a day. And I gutted it out, and I walked the entire marathon, and it was like a 5.5 hour walk, and I finished, and it was my slowest Ironman. But then after the race, it was pretty funny because John Mayfield, who's the head of the coaching for TriDot, he's been my coach, and he was on a Facebook group that I was not a part of. And a lady that I had apparently been on the race course with was like, I saw this guy and he was wearing a TriDot visor and a Vendetta kit. And he told me that he was an agent, and he was high-fiving every volunteer and every law enforcement and picking up everybody around him and telling jokes. And she's like, that is what triathlon is about. Mm-hmm. And I think we forget that, right? And it made me probably the most proud of anything and any of those medals that are on my wall, because in my darkest point in an Ironman race, I still was who I wanted to be. And it showed to other people, to the point where she reached out and John Mayfield goes, that's my boy, Doug. And and now I'm friends with her on Facebook, and it's fantastic. Yeah. And like, that's the kind of person that I want to be. And I think we should not forget that while we're racing.
Absolutely. Awesome. Yeah. So with triathlon, just a little bit behind you, what do you find yourself doing now to kind of feed the bug?
Last November I had a third ankle surgery, and my doctor basically told me the next one will be an ankle fusion. Mm-hmm. And so don't run anymore. But luckily, over the COVID time, I was lucky enough to watch the World's Toughest Race Eco Challenge on Amazon Prime. And I was like, wow, that looks awesome. How do I do that? I like to suffer. So
you get talked into things pretty easily, it seems like.
Yeah. So I actually found some orienteering groups around here where I live in Northern Virginia. And there's a lot of adventure races around here. And I've been lucky enough to be able to transition into adventure racing, which, if you're not familiar with adventure racing, it's basically a triathlon on steroids, except nobody tells you what the route is. You get a map and a compass and you have to go figure it out. It's kind of a choose your own adventure, because you can pick what points you go to and what you don't. And at the end of the day, the team that finishes in the fastest time with the most amount of points wins. I have done anywhere from 4 hour, 8 hour, 12, 24. And last year I did a 72-hour race across Florida. Wow. And I'm scheduled to go do that race again in February. And I'm also going to be doing a 5-day race in July of next year.
Wow.
And if you're wondering, like the clock doesn't stop. So wow. Neither do you. In that 72 hours, I got 3.5 hours of sleep.
Wow. Wow.
And it's just, no, I was going to say you're trekking, mountain biking, or paddling throughout the entire thing. So if you're looking for something even more than Ironman, as you were listening to this, go watch Eco Challenge. It's hosted by Bear Grylls, so it's actually very enjoyable to watch. And some of the things you'll probably be like, there's no way I'm doing that. But I love it, and I can't wait to do more.
Wow. So, oh, man. So on top of all this, Doug, you also balance coaching still, correct?
I do.
Your specialty is pretty much working. I mean, would you say working with Clydesdales, or do you coach athletes of all ages, backgrounds, distances? Like, what are you doing this day and age with coaching?
So I started about 3 or 4 years in. At the time, I was a local law enforcement officer, and I had some officers that wanted to get involved in the sport. So I started coaching them. So I was like, oh, let me figure out how to get coaching. So I got USAT certified. And then when Ironman came out with their certification, I got certified with Ironman. And I got lucky enough, you know, to be friends with John Mayfield and be brought on with TriDot. And absolutely love it, because it gives me as a coach a lot more time to focus on my athletes than it did, you know, than putting together plans and trying to figure things out. But for me, I think that I have the most luck with people who are Clydesdale athletes, because I think that we have a very unique needs and issues that come up on race day. I mean, I still battle with food and eating and like having those issues and wanting to train. And unlike you, like, I still eat that way when I'm not training. I don't have the discipline all the time to not be like, oh, you're not training right now. Don't eat 3,000 calories today. And those wings look so good. I mean, in my Ironman special needs bag, I have pieces of pizza, you know, so because you need something good during the race.
It's got sodium, it's got carbs, yeah, so, it's got protein, right?
That's right. And it gives you something to look forward to during the race. You know, there's something to that old meme where the guy's on the treadmill with the hamburger on a string in front of him, right? Like we're always working out for our next meal. But yeah, so I do think that I have a unique insight into Clydesdale athletes and Athena athletes. And, you know, I've been lucky enough to have some really good success. And I've, you know, I really love coaching, because I love being able to pass on the knowledge that I have and helping people reach goals that they never thought were achievable. Because I think that's what triathlon is about, right? If anybody would have told any of us before we did our first triathlon that we were going to go out and do that distance, whatever it is, sprint, Olympic, half, full, like it doesn't matter, we would have probably all laughed at them. And until you go do that first one and you realize, holy cow, I can do this, think that we let that doubt creep in. Everyone that's probably listening to this podcast can relate to them telling a coworker at work that they're going out to do an hour run. And them going, are you nuts? Because we all have that. So now think about that when you're stepping up to a sprint triathlon or from a sprint to an Olympic. And now you're going from an hour to 3 hours and then right. to a half, where you're now moving from 3 to 7. And people think you're crazy, but it's really just putting yourself outside of your comfort zone and finding people that will support you and surrounding yourself with those people. And it doesn't necessarily have to be coaches. Like, find training groups, go out and find a master swim class. And you're going to find several triathletes who are in there going, man, I need to work on this portion of the sport. Talk to people at races. Like, I think the biggest thing that I would tell anybody who's listening to this, that's looking to either do their first triathlon or to step up their game to a higher triathlon, like a bigger one, sign up for it. Because if you sign up for it and you put that goal, and you talked about planting the seed, right? You plant exactly. that seed in your head, then you're going to want to grow it, because you don't want to just have some weed out in the middle of your yard. You know, you want to cultivate it. And if you don't plant that seed, then it's never going to grow.
No, definitely agree. Now, I mean, Doug, it's obvious that you've brought from that first 15 mile bike ride that you did with your friend all the way to Cozumel, where you got engaged, to, I guess, the two times your wife must have beat you because you have two children. I mean, all the way to all your orienteering now at this point, but just a wealth of knowledge, a wealth of experience, and just your stories have been great. I mean, it's obvious that you bring a tremendous sense of humor to the table, and I think that's a great way for you to break ice and open up with people and relate to them. But I think once that humor passes, I mean, it's obviously you're genuine, you're caring, you're supportive, you're knowledgeable, and you care and you're there for them. Even the comment you made about at Texas being known for being that guy cheering, that really talks about your character and your integrity. And I love it. I definitely will make sure that in show notes, we have contact information for you. That way, if anybody out there is listening, is interested in coaching Clydesdale or Athena's or anybody in particular and reaching out to you, that they can get in contact with you. Any last second, just comments or any words of wisdom that you'd like to share with the listeners?
So two things. First, thank you. You know, I take on athletes that I want to bring into what I call my family. So my Instagram is Team Silk Racing, because I want it to be a team. I want it to be a family. My best friend in the world right now, Adam, I met through TriDot and coaching, right? Like, he came on as one of my athletes, and, you know, now we're best friends. And so I think, like, when I'm coaching, I'm thinking about building those relationships and building that kind of family around me and helping them succeed. And the last thing I'll you know, leave you with is a quote, which is, there's no such thing as winning or losing. There's only winning or learning. And I really love that, because especially in this sport, you're not losing. Everything is a learning process. I've done over 200 races probably, and I learn something at every race. I learn something almost every workout that I'm doing, whether it's about myself, whether it's about what I need to be doing, or those kind of things. And I think that if we remember that, and that this journey is the success, like I tell people when they go out to a race, that that's their victory parade. That's where they should be out high-fiving everyone, because those people are out there to celebrate your success. They haven't seen all the hours of work that you've spent in your basement, out on the roads by yourself, in that isolated training or whatever, all the group rides or group runs that you've given up to focus on your training. They're seeing what you're doing on that day, and that is your victory parade. And so go out and celebrate yourself, allow yourself to be celebrated by others, and remember that this is fun. You talked about family, and I tell people at every race to assign a number to your most important people in your life. So, like, my wife is number one, my kids are 2 and 3, my best friend's number 4, my coach is 5. And every time I look down at my watch and I see that number on my watch, whether it's a mile or a minute or an hour or whatever, I think about a special memory with them. And that helps dig me out of those deep places in a race. And then I'm able to go after the race and say, look, when I was at mile 45, I thought about the time when you and I did this. Or, you know, I thought about, man, I just want to give you a big hug. Or I couldn't wait to cross that finish line and give you a kiss. Like, those are the moments that you will remember, and that you will make sure that they know that they were a part of your journey as well.
Absolutely.
It's a moment like that, you sharing that idea, is why we wanted to do this podcast. Yeah. Is because those little nuggets of wisdom is what every one of us have somewhere in these experiences. Yeah. That's fantastic.
Doug, this has been great. Thank you so much. you know, definitely want you to stick on. I know, as Jay pointed out in the intro, it's been an exciting week out there in the multi-sport world. There's been a lot of humming going around about the world championship race. And if you want to start there.
Yeah. And real quick, just in case a listener doesn't know what we're talking about or hasn't seen the news, Ironman changed the world championships for the full distance. It's always been known as Kona, and for most years has only been held in Kona with the men and women racing on the same day. And so they had the 2 days in Kona, which overwhelmed the island with so many people that they then announced that next year in 2023, the women's world championship will remain in Kona and the men's will not be in Kona, and the location is still to be determined. And one of the big issues with this is that there have already been quite a few races that were Kona qualifiers for 2023, and men that have qualified, and all the advertising and the coins that came out said the date will be, I think it was October 12th and 14th in Kona. And some of those guys have already purchased their airfare or Airbnbs, because as Jay experienced this last year in Kona, that books up fast and it gets very expensive fast. So I think Ironman said that 1,000 men had already qualified for next year Kona, and now they don't even know where they're going to be racing. So I think that's really extremely unfortunate. And I hope that Ironman steps it up and somehow helps them. Though it doesn't sound like that's going to be the case. And it's a really difficult conundrum in balancing women having their own day and then just so many athletes, and then maintaining the integrity of a true world championship race.
Yeah, it's a real hot potato. It's pretty amazing the differences of opinion or perspective on this. And I don't know how deep we want to go down this rabbit hole. There's no doubt. But I think it is worth at least having a quick moment to say it's a change. I'm at least want to recognize the fact that Ironman, good or bad, business, whatever people want to think, they have to face a really difficult decision. And they tried to probably make the best decision they could as a business, which is part of why they exist. I'm at least satisfied that Kona Dreamers haven't lost Kona. Having to think about strategically which year you're going to go for it now is a new strategy that's out there. I'm really excited for the women and having their own race, and that is the commitment they made. But I'm worried personally about the decisions sponsors and media and even families now have to make on who gets to race, because now to afford to international trips, if you have a man and wife that, you know, both qualify, they may need to split up or may not be able to race together anymore. So a lot of heartbreak out there, lots and lots of perspectives, no doubt.
Yeah. As an Ironman University coach, we got a email sent out specifically to us. Obviously, if we were working with athletes and we asked questions to help educate us as coaches, one of the interesting things that I saw was that all Ironman races between now and when they make the announcement in January of 2023, there will be a live women's roll down, like where they'll do slot allocation and roll down. However, there will not be a live men's. All of the races that occur between now and when it's announced will be done virtually. At that point, I guess they'll have the choice of whether or not they want to accept it or how that'll happen. Yeah, they definitely got a can of worms open. It'll be interesting to see where this goes and what the culture of Ironman racing turns into. So
I wonder, you know, just from someone who at one point had aspirations to get a legacy spot to go race in Kona, and I've done the 70.3 there twice, but never being fast enough to qualify for the big race. Like, I wonder if Ironman has put any thought into giving people the option to opt into an A or a B year. So, like, if you got in, would you want to go to Nice? Would you want to wait a year and go the next year in Kona? Like, I think, that they're doing themselves a disservice if they don't do that. I mean, I understand the idea and I completely support, you know, having two different days. I thought this year was phenomenal. Like I actually watched the women's race more than I watched the men's race. But I think that to go away from the roots of this sport and of Ironman, which is in Kona, I think it's going to upset a lot of people.
Yeah. I think it's unfortunate. And I still wonder if, you know, when they broke it into 2 days, if the issue with the island was really that they broke it into 2 days or that they just had too many people, and to whether, you know, or even just not having it be a Thursday, Saturday, maybe going Friday, Saturday, or, you know, something like that, the way it was held in St. George, consecutive days versus spreading the time that people and athletes would need to be there for the men and the women, and then the volume, the sheer volume of people that were racing those 2 days. I don't know. I guess you never know.
Well, one thing's for sure, regardless of what happens, I can guarantee you that those races are going to sell out and they're going to be full participants, whether the location is Nice or whether the location is Kona. Ironman's established them as such a business. People are going to come. They're going to pay the money. They're going to do it. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes. I'm sure we can expect a lot more coming probably here in the next 6 weeks as they make that announcement about the men's venue. Definitely something to pay attention to, and I'm sure we'll be talking about it on future episodes. But some great racing over the weekend as well, too. I think what we have, Clash Daytona and 70.3 Indian Wells this weekend?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Clash Daytona is the race of the ITU specialists. Clearly, when you look at the top three, the men and women, Vincent Louis pulling out the win, and then Angelica Olmo on the ladies' side. We have some friends out there at Clash Daytona?
We did, actually. Super happy. One of my athletes was racing there today, one of Jillian's teammates, racing in female. She did phenomenal, Lauren LeBlanc. She actually finished third overall and first in her age group. So she had a great day out there today, represented the team well. So super proud of her. It was a great end to a fantastic season for her. So Lauren, congrats. Super proud of you, girl.
That's awesome. So Clash has a world championship in San Marin. Is that where they normally do theirs?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Okay. Well, maybe Lauren has a trip in her future. It'd be exciting to hear.
Oh, yeah.
Indian Wells, Paula Finley, really dominant on the bike and held off charging Tamara Jewett, who ran a 1:14 half. Still came in second, but boy, she pulled so it fast. Really tight there at the end.
Was she driving?
Well, you know what's funny about that is I always run an hour and 14 minutes. But then you usually have to double that.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Oh, man. And then Sam Long hanging in there. Really strong performance for him today. And I'm sure he was pretty stoked after the few disappointments that he's had this year. But Jackson Laundry finishing second after finishing eighth at Clash Daytona 2 days ago. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Pack up, fly. His bike arrived in one piece and could finish second.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think we have an acquaintance that made her pro debut out there.
Yeah, Elizabeth Einbeck. She ended up finishing, I think, seventh, right, in the pro field. So that was her pro debut. Yeah. And I know we met her, Matt and I met her at 70.3 World Champs. We did a warm-up swim with her. So great super gal nice. And super excited for her.
It's great.
Yeah. Well, guys, it's been such a great, great conversation and really neat getting to know you a little bit more, Doug. I actually, you know, only see a little bit of what gets posted on social, but knew nothing really of your history, your journey, et cetera. And just really awesome getting to know you a little bit more. Such a great guy. So thank you very much for your time again. And
thank you for having
thank you
me.
You're very welcome. And just want to say thank you to our listeners again. So very happy that you guys choose to listen to us. And I hope that you enjoy these podcasts as much as we do. As a reminder, feel free to reach out to us with any comments, questions. If you have anything you'd like us to talk about in a future podcast, or even if you have a story that you want to share with us or know somebody or you yourself would want to be a guest on the podcast in the future, don't hesitate to reach out to us by email at triathlonagegroupjourney@gmail.com or you can find us on Instagram at Triathlon Age Group Journey. So thank you very much again. And guys, I hope you have a great week. I can't wait to catch up next weekend.
Thanks, Jillian. Doug, it's been great. Thanks again. And hope you guys all make it a great week.
Thank you, guys.